Namaste Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So today there will be a reading from the Krishna book, and this reading will continue each day until we reach Janmashtami, as opposed to our usual Bhagavatam class. Om Agyanati Mirandas Yagananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Unmalitam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha. I was born in the darkness of ignorance, and my spiritual master opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. I offer my humble obeisances unto his lotus feet. So I was asked to read from, if I can get the speck out of my eye. They're not tears of devotion, believe me. The chapter from the Krishna book that I'll be reading from is the killing of the Agasura demon. Chapter 12. In my book, it's page 125. Okay. Once the Lord desired to go early in the morning with all his cowherd boyfriends to the forest, where they were to assemble together and take lunch. As soon as he got up from bed, he blew his buffalo horn bugle and called all his friends together. Keeping the calves before them, they started for the forest in a great procession. In this way, Lord Krishna assembled thousands of his boyfriends. They were each equipped with a stick, flute, and horn, as well as a lunch bag, and each of them was taking care of thousands of calves. All the boys appeared very jolly and happy in the excursion. Each and every one of them, including Krishna, was attentive to his personal calves as he herded them in the different places in the forest. The boys were fully decorated with various kinds of golden ornaments, yet out of sporting propensities, they began to pick up flowers, leaves, twigs, peacock feathers, and red clay from different places in the forest, and further decorate themselves in different ways. While passing through the forest, one boy stole another boy's lunch package and passed it to a third. When the boy whose lunch package was stolen came to know of it, he tried to take it back. But the boy who had it threw it to another boy. This sporting playing went on amongst the boys as childhood pastimes. When Lord Krishna went ahead to a distant place in order to see some specific scenery, the boys behind him ran to try to catch up and be the first to touch him. So there was a great competition. One would say, "I will go there and touch Krishna." And another would say, "Oh, you cannot go. I'll touch Krishna first." Some of them played on their flutes or vibrated bugles made of buffalo horn. Some of them gladly followed the peacocks and imitated the omnipoetic sounds of the cuckoo. While the birds were flying in the sky, the boys ran after the birds' shadows along the ground and tried to follow their exact courses. Some of them went to the monkeys and silently sat down by them, and some of them imitated the dancing of the peacocks. Some of them caught the tails of the monkeys and played with them, and when the monkeys jumped into a tree, the boys followed. When a monkey showed its face and teeth, a boy imitated and showed his teeth to the monkeys. Some of the boys played with the frogs on the bank of the Yamuna, And when out of fear the frogs jumped into the water, the boys immediately dove after them. And they would come out of the water when they saw their own shadows and stand imitating, making caricatures and laughing. They would also go to an empty well and make loud sounds. And when the echo came back, they would call it ill names and laugh. So everything I'm reading here may seem like some child's pastime or some play, some frolic, some frivolous activity of kids. But it is anything but that. We have to understand who these little cowherd boys were. And this will be talked about by Srila Prabhupada in a few paragraphs down. These are great sages who, by their incredible amount, incredible degree of austerities, have won the great opportunity to serve Krishna in a way which is unbelievable and incredible. Here we have the Lord of the universe who holds up the universe, sustains it, maintains it, creates it, dissolves it, who allows, disallows everything that happens in the universe to occur. It is all happening by his will. And yet here he is, he who is so smart, so capable, so amazing, he's playing like a little boy. He's playing with monkeys' tails. He's running after bird shadows. He's diving into frog ponds. As we will see, he wrestles with his boyfriends. He dances up and down like a peacock. And they're all laughing, and they're playing, and they're racing to touch Krishna. And how is this devotional service, one may ask, since it seems very much like the things we did as kids? Devotional service is not merely putting one's palms together, bowing one's head, and then saying, I offer this to you, Krishna. Krishna has within him the tendency to enjoy his children. We're all his children. Just like your father, my father, I don't know whether it was in your family, but I know when I was very young, my father would get down on the floor. I would be 3 or 4 years old, and he would get on his all fours, and I would jump on his back, and I would pull on his collar and say, giddy up, giddy up, giddy up, come on. And I would slap him on the side, kick him on the side, and he was enjoying this. He was having a lot of fun. He didn't get angry. He didn't slap me for kicking him. He didn't slap me for pulling the back of his hair and messing it up. He was playing and enjoying, and then suddenly he'd do something like this and throw me on the ground. And then he'd look down at me and say, you're not as big and tough as you think you are, kind of like that. So this is the play and the fun of father and sons, or father and daughter, or mother and daughter. It's just a natural propensity to do this. And the father actually gets a lot of pleasure out of this. Don't ask me why, because I don't know why, but it's in Krishna. And he obviously is getting a tremendous amount of the same kind of pleasure playing with his cowherd boyfriends and just living it up to the max, full of frolic, full of pleasure, full of all sorts of trivial activities. And yet they are very important. This is service to Krishna. Service doesn't mean, as I said, just putting one's palms together or making an offering of food or shaking a fan or a light. It's also in allowing or assisting Krishna in his desire to want to play like a child. He enjoys doing that. We are his children, and he plays with the children because the children, of course, are little, 3, 4, 5 years old, and he gets a kick out of this. And they're all serving him. Similarly, Mother Yashoda, when she's running after him with a stick because he stole some butter, he's enjoying this, although tears are flowing down his eyes and that collyrium or the mascara is running down the sides of his cheeks. He's enjoying this. And when she takes the stick and she looks into his big, beautiful, lotus-like eyes and says, you naughty, naughty boy, and he starts crying, and she realizes that she doesn't want to terrorize him and give him some fear for the future. Therefore, she drops the stick and says, you come with me now. She takes him, picks him up, and brings him into the cow shed and ties him to a wooden mortar where he will then stay for a little while. So that's his pleasure. This is service. When the gopis of Vrindavan, they come running out after him to listen to his flute playing, or to fan him, to massage his feet, to glorify him, to play musical instruments before him, to offer him some foodstuffs. This is service. So there are numerous kinds of services in what we call different types of rasas. There are rasas in the neutrality, and one has awe and reverence. There's rasas in servitorship, such as in Hanuman, who is an ideal of that. There is rasas in friendship, as we see in Arjuna, which is one kind of friendship, the pal, the chum. And then another type of friendship, the kiddie friendship. So all of them are serving Krishna in different ways. And then there is the vatsal, or the parental type of service, in which the parent feels that he or she is needed and necessary for the protection and help of the child, Krishna. And then there, of course, is the madhurya, which I just mentioned, the loving, romantic, intimate type of service in which Krishna's heart is stirred and stimulated, and in which he feels such pure love coming from the gopis of Vrindavan, so great does he feel obligated to them for the service they render him, that he says to them, "I can never repay you. That's impossible for me to do. All I can ever do," as Krishna says, as they surrender unto me, "I reward them." He says, "I can't reward you. So please be satisfied with the compensation from your own devotional service. And that will bring you the joy, the happiness, the fulfillment and satisfaction which no one else can ever have." And so he gives himself. He said, "That's all I have, just me. That's all." And that's everything to the gopis of Vrindavan. They couldn't want more. And yet, when they think of Krishna, they do not think of, you know, how they can monopolize him, how they can control him, how they can move him in whichever way they want. Their only concern is how they can please him. How can we please Krishna more? How can we extend the width of his smile? How can we make him laugh? All they want to do is give more and more pleasure to Krishna. And it is a pure offering because they are not expecting anything back from Krishna. The very fact that they are being given this amazing, wonderful, excellent opportunity to serve him, which is a grace which is unfathomable. Who gets the grace to serve Krishna in a close, romantic way, dancing around in a circle with him? So they feel very, very greatly rewarded. And as a result of this reward of his company, they simply want to serve more, and never even care about themselves. As far as they're concerned, they don't exist. The only one who exists is Krishna, and their bodies, their minds, their intelligence is for no other purpose than to serve Krishna's pleasure. And this is our ideal. This is our goal. This is our where we have to be thinking all the time. So these great sages who wanted in the past to serve Krishna in a more intimate and a closer and in a loving way, who could not do that because they were sages, and Lord Ramachandra was male and they were male, so there was no question of walking around and embracing as two males. It just didn't fly in those days. Maybe today it does, but not in those days. So Ramachandra mentioned to him that, "I will be taking birth as Lord Krishna at some time in the future. And you come take birth at that time, and we can play together as cowherd boys, or we can play together as pals, as chums, and so forth. And or we can play together as you can be females, you can be gopis, and we can have a nice romantic relationship." So, but I dare say that the romance that they have is completely pure. I want to emphasize this, because sometimes you find people who misinterpret these scriptures, and Prabhupada gives page after page of warning that this is not a worldly, ordinary, romantic relationship. It has nothing to do with that. It is a relationship of the heart, and it never goes below the heart. It doesn't drop below the belly button. It never gets there. It stays right here. That's where it stimulates. That's where they feel the bliss. That's where they feel the the peace. That's where they feel the ecstasy. All of these things are felt in the heart. And it's almost like an explosion which takes place there, which erupts into various devotional symptoms, such as we see with Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu playing the part of Srimati Radharani, eruptions on his arms, goosebumps like the size of peas, hairs standing up on end, tears not dripping down but squirting out, his hair on his head, whatever little growth there was, standing up on end. As I said, perspiring profusely, trembling, so much trembling that his teeth even began to shake and shatter. People thought the teeth were going to fall out. And his whole body trembling, becoming white, pallid completely. And then voice choked up, unable to speak. Trying to say, Lord Jagannath, he said, he can't get it out because he's so choked up with loving emotion for Krishna. He's in the mood of Srimati Radharani. And she can't even say the name Jagannath. She can't say Krishna because the heart, so to speak, has got into her throat. I'm just being a little metaphorical, but that's the, it's her heart is in the throat and she's choked. And when the gopis saw Krishna at the Kurukshetra, they hadn't seen him for many, many years. And they approached him. They couldn't speak. Their eyes were stunned. They just drank him into their eyes and put him into their hearts and then completely hugged him in the heart until finally they recovered and then said, my dear Krishna, we would like to talk to you privately. Can we please remove from this place where all these soldiers are and all these marching bands are and the elephants are and the jangling of the different bells that are on the elephant. This is not the environment that we knew you in. We would like to just go into the forest a little bit and talk with you a little bit. And of course they went there and they begged him and cried out to him, please, we want you to come back to Vrindavan so that we can engage again in pastimes with you. Would you please be so kind as to do this? And Krishna says, yes, I will do this. I've just got a few more demons to kill. Just give me a few more days. I'll get these demons killed. Dantavrakra and the other one who thought he was Krishna, Pundraka, and a few others. As soon as I get finished with that, I'll come back. Yes. He did come back at some point after killing two particular demons. I can't remember their names. But he came back, but he didn't stay there for a long period of time, as they would love to have. So, coming on to the reading of the Krishna book, I thought that I would inject a few of those very important points that Srila Prabhupada has made. Yeah, thank you. As stated personally by the Supreme Personality of Godhead in the Bhagavad Gita, he is realized proportionately by transcendentalists as Brahman, Paramatma, and the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Here, in confirmation of the same statement, Lord Krishna rewards the impersonalists the pleasure of Brahman realization by his bodily effulgence. So just for clarification for some of the new persons here, Krishna is emanating rays of light infinitely all over the universe. And those rays of light are living entities. Yes, they are rays of infinite living entities. And the impersonalists simply want to merge their little entity of light into that vast expanse of light and just rest there. Of course, it's quite boring. It's boring because, as Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, the constitutional position of the living entity is to be an eternal servant of Krishna. And when you're lying on your back, just absorbing light, and you're peaceful, yes, but you're meant for service, you're meant for activity, you're meant for devotional offering. And if we're not doing that, we're like a fish out of water. And the fish out of water does what? What does it do? It flip-flops. Why does it flip-flop? Because it wants to get back into the water, which is its natural environment. And if it doesn't get that, it dies. And virtually everyone in this world is dead. It's dead from its pure spiritual existence. And that is why our Srila Prabhupada has come here to revive all the dead. Of course, the soul can never die, for anyone who thinks I mean that, no. But it can be covered over, and it virtually is dead as a result of the covering. And when the soul is covered over with lust and anger and greed and envy and illusion, madness, gluttony and pride and all of those wonderful things that make our life so wonderful, when we're covered with all that, then what happens? The soul is virtually dead because it wants to be Krishna instead of serve Krishna. And as a result of wanting to be Krishna, it wants to be served. And wanting to be served, it is out of its natural propensity to be a servant of the Lord, and ultimately it suffers, suffers, and suffers. An intelligent person does not take part in the sources of misery, which are due to contact with the material senses. Such pleasures of the senses have a beginning and an end, and the wise person does not delight in them. What does he delight in? He delights in infinite, unfailing, unbroken pleasure. That is the kind of pleasure we're supposed to be having. And when we return to the spiritual world, or even before, if we all become God-realized, self-realized souls, that unbroken pleasure, as Srila Prabhupada always had, that unbroken pleasure will be our pleasure as well. And will be unaffected, undisturbed, unshaken, and unruffled by anything and everything that happens in the material world, because we will no longer be afflicted by the modes of material nature, which cause us to be afflicted and affected and disturbed and upset by these things. When the modes of nature cannot touch us because we have become, or our bodies have become, our minds have become, our intelligence has become totally, fully transcendental, spiritual, divine, totally connected with, associating with Krishna, how can anything touch? Nothing can affect Krishna. And if it can affect him and we are associating with him, then we have his protection. Those who are under the spell of the external energy, Maya, take him only as a beautiful child. Yet he gave full transcendental pleasure to the cowherd boys who played with him. Only after accumulating heaps of pious activities were those boys promoted to personally associate with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Who can estimate the transcendental fortune of the residents of Vrindavan? They were personally seeing the Supreme Personality of Godhead face to face. He whom many yogis cannot find even after undergoing severe austerities, although he is sitting within their hearts. This is confirmed in the Brahma Samhita. One may search for Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, through the pages of the Vedas and Upanishads, but it is difficult to find him there. However, one who is fortunate enough to associate with a devotee can see the Supreme Personality of Godhead face to face. Now, this word devotee, Prabhupada didn't qualify it, but if you read so many other things, he's talking about a pure devotee, God-realized devotee, self-realized devotee, devotee on the Krishna Prema level. It's not like any devotee who comes here and becomes a new bhakta that you associate with him, that you're going to see Krishna face to face. That just doesn't work. We have to unbridle ourselves of all the impurities and all the filth, the dirt, the bad desires, the tendency to commit offenses. All that has to be out of the person's life. And then, yes, we become qualified to see Krishna face to face. Although we cannot demand that, nor can you even expect it, because Krishna is his own person, and he gives what he wants when he wants. Sometimes the devotee says, well, I'm not having any transcendental experience. I'm not feeling all this ecstasy you keep talking about. Maybe I'm going to leave. This is not for me. I said, well, where are you? Krishna is testing your patience, and you're failing. You're getting an F. So wherever you're going to go, you're not going to find Krishna. So patience, perseverance, dedication, loyalty, all these qualities you need to develop. And when you have you developed them? Well, no, not yet, but well, keep on working, keep on trying, keep on persevering. And then maybe, if Krishna sees fit, he will give you a taste of himself in the form of a sight of him, a sound of him, the touch of him, the general vibration of him. But that's not the goal. The goal is, as I mentioned before, the gopis have one goal in mind. The cowherd boys have one goal in mind, to give pleasure to Krishna. They're not thinking of their own pleasure. Their pleasure is giving credit. It may seem that they were just concerned about, yes, they were enjoying like anything, but their enjoyment was in seeing Krishna fully enjoying. This is the completely selfless state. This is pure devotional love. Who can estimate that? I already read that, sorry. However, one who is fortunate enough to associate with a devotee, or a pure devotee, can see the Supreme Personality of Godhead face to face. Of course, I dare say that if Krishna wants to appear before the most sinful person in the world, there's nothing to stop him. It's not his general procedure, but nothing is impossible for Krishna. Look at King Kamsa, who went back to the eternal world after hating Krishna night and day. So what is impossible for Krishna if he wants to appear to somebody for whatever reason he has to make it? Sometimes persons have had total transformations in their lives just because they've had some very amazing, astonishing experience in having the presence of Krishna and feeling an ecstasy which turned them around completely from their material life. So Krishna can do that. I wasn't trying to say that he doesn't do that. He can do that, and he will do that if it's in his desire, he thinks it proper and right. But generally, we have to work, serve, and not expect. And on the other hand, know that if and when Krishna wants us to see him, wants us to be close to him, wants us to come back to the eternal world, well, nothing can stop it if Krishna wants it. When Lord Krishna was enjoying his childhood pastimes with his boyfriends, one Agasura demon became very impatient. He was unable to tolerate seeing Krishna play so happily, and therefore he appeared before the boys intending to, what? Kill them. The Agasura was so dangerous that even the denizens of heaven were afraid of him. Although the denizens of heaven drank nectar daily to prolong their lives, they were afraid of this Agasura and were wondering, when will the demon be killed? The denizens used to drink nectar to become immortal, but actually they were not confident of their immortality. Why? They were still identifying themselves with the body. And as long as we identify ourselves with the body, no matter how long you live, you're still frightened that you will lose that body, because losing the body means losing that enormous amount of sense gratification that you get with that body in that heavenly planet. So that's the fear. When will the demon be killed? The denizens used to drink nectar to become immortal, but actually they were not confident. I just read that. They were free of fear. The boys who were playing with Krishna had no fear of the demons. They were free of fear. Any material arrangement for protecting oneself from death is always unsure. And look at President Ronald Reagan, going back many years ago. He had all these secret servicemen all around his car. He got out of his car, and this John Hinckley got a shot at him and hit him and hit his secretary, I think, or associate, and he went to the hospital, became paralyzed, with all these secret servicemen all around. Still, they could not protect him. Because if Krishna wants to kill you, no one can protect you. If Krishna wants to protect you, no one can kill you. And so instead of taking shelter of Krishna, he's taking shelter only of the secret servicemen, which is to depend upon... What do we call those? Infallible soldiers, yes. They were free of fear. Any material arrangement for protecting oneself from death is always unsure. But if one is in Krishna consciousness, then immortality is confidently assured. The demon Agasura appeared before Krishna. Let me see how much time. We've got a few more minutes. The demon Agasura appeared before Krishna and his friends. Agasura happened to be the younger brother of, anybody remember who? Putana and Bakasura, yes. And he thought, Krishna has killed my brother and sister. Now I shall kill him along with all his friends and calves. Agasura was instigated by Kamsa. So he had come with determination. Agasura also thought that when he would offer grains and water in memory of his brother and sister and kill Krishna and all the cowherd boys, then automatically all the inhabitants of Vrindavan would die. Generally, for the householders, the children are the life and breath force. When all the children die, then naturally the parents also die on account of strong affection for them. Agasura, thus deciding to kill all the inhabitants of Vrindavan, expanded himself by the yogic city called Mahima. The demons are generally expert in achieving almost all kinds of mystic powers. In the yoga system, by the perfection called Mahima Siddhi, one can expand himself as he desires. The demon Agasura expanded himself up to 8 miles and assumed the shape of a very fat serpent. Having attained this wonderful body, he stretched his mouth open just like a mountain cave, desiring to swallow all the boys at once. Including Krishna and Balaram, he sat on the path. The demon in the shape of a big fat serpent expanded his lips from land to sky. His lower lip was touching the ground, and his upper lip was touching the clouds. His jaws appeared like a big mountain cave, without limitation, and his teeth appeared just like mountain summits. His tongue appeared to be a broad traffic way, and he was breathing just like a hurricane. His eyes were blazing like fire. At first, the boys thought that the demon was a statue, but after examining it, they saw that it was a big serpent lying down on the road and widening its mouth. The boys began to talk among themselves. Dear friends, this figure appears to be a great animal, and he is sitting in such a posture just to swallow us all. But see, it is not a big swallow at all. But see, it is not a big snake that has. But is it not? Sorry, is it not a big snake that has widened his mouth to eat all of us? One of them said, "Yes, what you say is true. The animal's upper lip appears to be just like the sunshine, and its lower lip is just like the reflection of red sunshine on the ground. Dear friends, just look to the right and left-hand side of the mouth of the animal. Its mouth appears to be like a big mountain cave, and its height cannot be estimated. The chin is also raised just like a mountain summit. That long highway appears to be its tongue, and inside the mouth, it is as dark as in a mountain cave. The hot wind that is blowing like a hurricane is his breathing, and that fishy, bad smell coming out of his mouth is the smell of his intestines." Ugh. Then they further consulted amongst themselves. "If we all at one time entered into the mouth of this great serpent, how could it possibly swallow all of us? And even if it were to swallow all of us at once, it could not swallow who?" "Yes. Krishna will immediately kill him, as he did Bakasura." Talking in this way, all the boys looked at the beautiful lotus-like face of Krishna, and they began to clap and smile. And so they marched forward and entered the mouth of the gigantic serpent. Meanwhile, Krishna, who is the super soul within everyone's heart, could understand that the big statuesque figure was a demon. The boys did not know this, however, and thus, while Krishna was planning how to stop the destruction of his intimate friends, all the boys, along with their calves, entered the mouth of the serpent. But Krishna did not enter. The demon was waiting, awaiting Krishna's entrance, and he was thinking, "Everyone has entered except Krishna, who has killed my brother and sister." Krishna is the assurance of safety to everyone. But when he saw that his friends were already out of his hands and were lying within the body of a great serpent, he became momentarily aggrieved. He was also struck with wonder at how the external energy works so wonderfully. He then began to consider how he could kill the demon and at the same time save the boys and calves. Although there was no factual concern on Krishna's part, he was thinking like that. Finally, this is coming at the end of the paragraph. Finally, after some deliberation, he also entered the mouth of the demon. When Krishna entered, all the demigods who had gathered to see the fun and who were hiding within the clouds expressed their feelings with the words, "Alas, alas!" Why should they say, "Alas, alas"? After all, it's Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. They forget. They see him just like Lord Brahma saw him as a child, charming, beautiful, lovable, tiny, helpless, weak. They forget. There's nothing to worry about, but they're saying, "Alas, alas." At the same time, all the friends of Agasura, especially Kamsa, who are all accustomed to eating flesh and blood, expressed their jubilation, understanding that Krishna had also entered the mouth of the demon, and of course they presumed that he would die. So I'll stop here because I've gone over time. Are there any quick questions that I may be able to answer, or any confusion or any? Yes, bye. Yeah. Well, that's apparent. That's my speculation, that they were there. That's how they know. They're seeing this. They're hiding someplace and watching the whole scene take place. Otherwise, as you just indicated, how would they know? There's no indication or mention that they were all using their telepathic powers from wherever they were, and they were seeing it that way, although that's possible, too. But the more reasonable understanding is that Kamsa was there. He had, if you will, sigged, or he had instigated Agasura to kill Krishna and his cowherd boyfriends. So why not watch the show? Why not watch Krishna get killed? That's what his desire. Of course, he was sorely disappointed. Okay? Any other question? Thank you so much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada ki jai. All glories to Krishna book ki jai.
Scripture, the Kali Shantara Upanishad, it's Hare Krishna in the Narada Purana. It's also Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. But there are some other Puranas where they chant Hare Rama first. So you can take your pick. If you're a Ram Bhakta, you can chant Ram first. And you chant it's the name and the feeling that goes with the name that's most.
Right.
Yeah. So he's correcting, but he doesn't know what I've just told you.
Okay. Yeah. Can I write down those?
Are you going to quote me on that? Yeah,
no.
Sure. Yeah, you can. Yeah, Kali Shantarana Upanishad and the Narada. It's the Harinama, 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 Eva Kevalam, Kalona, Steva, Nesteva. Narada. I'll get it for you. It's Narada Purana, but there's another word before it.
I can probably.
Yeah, you can get it, but it's if you look up Harinama, Harinama, Narada Purana, but there's one other word in it. And I can't just remember that right now.
Okay, no worries.
Yeah.
And that one, what's the one that has Krishna first?
I just didn't, those
so
two
that
I meant, the Kali Shantarana
and Narada.
And the other one is the Narada. Yeah. just one second.